uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on whiterosesociety.org, radiopower.org, and all other radio stations on the web. Welcome back to our program. A new report... Well, not just a new report, a recently released report, actually, from Congressman Waxman's office, talking about what's up with the Social Security Administration, and I'm very pleased to have with us Congressman Henry Waxman. Congressman Waxman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be with you.
I have to tell you, your staff is among the most competent on Capitol Hill. We deal with...
They are terrific. Yeah. Absolutely. They do a great job, and I'm proud of them.
Yeah, they really do. We deal with a lot of congressional staffers and great information. Now, I received a statement, your Social Security statement, here in the mail, prepared especially for me, right, a couple of days ago in the mail. And it's got this whole pitch on it about how Social Security is going to go bust in 2042. You have noted that something's going on here with the Social Security Administration. You want to tell us about this?
Something is going on. The Social Security Administration is supposed to make the Social Security system run. It's supposed to give people factual and accurate information for education purposes. But now, with President Bush setting the agenda to change Social Security, the supposedly nonpartisan Social Security Administration is putting out statements, not that your Social Security will be there when you retire, but statements that indicate Social Security is in deep jeopardy. There's a crisis financially, and long term is unsustainable. In other words, they're working to give the pitch that Bush wants, which is there's a crisis, you better panic about it, and then you better buy his solution to it. I'm offended because this is not supposed to be a partisan agency. It's supposed to be a government-run agency to give the straight facts about Social Security.
Yeah, I'm just astounded that they're using my Social Security dollars to hustle this stuff at me. It's just
so they're doing that, and also your tax dollars otherwise, because they're paid out of the general revenues as a group. As part of the government to administer the program.
Yeah, and the other thing that amazes me is that even folks who you might think of as being, you know, in the center of the road or on the left, like Jon Stewart on his Daily Show, which everybody, you know, it's a comedy show, but it's startling how many people under 30 get their news, actually, from that program, has promulgated in the last week or so some of the myths that are being put out by this administration. I mean, they're getting pretty pervasive, this whole idea that the system is going to buckle at the knees when really it seems that it just needs minor adjustments. So am I misstating it?
No, you're correct. It's propaganda. Bush people are very effective in that propagandizing of the American people. We've seen it in a number of other instances where they use covert propaganda using government funds. The most outrageous was when they actually paid money to a political pundit to promote the so-called No Child Left Behind bill. They paid him money. He never disclosed it and then went out and talked about what a great bill it was. They've sent out press releases, video press releases, with people pretending to be newscasters saying how great the Bush administration is on Medicare prescription drug bill, which most seniors are going to find is atrocious when they have to sort the way through the trying to get some help under the Medicare program for the high cost of prescription drugs. And then in this instance, they're just fitting in again to the propaganda, especially to young people. Social Security is not going to be there anyway, so you ought to be willing to go to this privatized system of private accounts because at least you'll maybe get something out of it. And then they tell them they're going to be able to pass it on to their heirs, but that's not really part of the proposal. The proposal is whatever you have in this fund, you then have to buy an annuity, which will pay you a stream of income the way Social Security would pay a stream of income, except it's going to be a lot less than what you'd get if we just repaired the Social Security system.
Yeah, this is just shifting. And in fact, the point of reality is that the private accounts don't even address the Social Security shortfall that he's running around talking about. It's like It's like pointing at 9/11 and then saying, let's go bomb Iraq. It's one of these misdirection things, is it not?
It not only is a misdirection, it makes the problem worse. Because if you have the payroll tax going to pay for the Social Security benefits, and then you take some of that those payroll taxes off the table for these private accounts, well, that means there's less money to pay for the Social Security benefits. So you either have to raise taxes, which the president said he won't do, or you go borrow more money.
Yeah.
Well, why are we borrowing more money to fund these privatized accounts if we're going to get money together? We need to just shore up the Social Security fund itself and not complicate it with private accounts. If people want to make investments, they should, but it shouldn't come out of the Social Security fund, because that should be there to keep the promise of Social Security as a income that you build on top of, not settle for alone.
As an insurance program, and in fact, a third of the people taking getting Social Security payments are not retirees. They're people who've been injured, people who have lost children, who've lost their parents, things like this.
That disability insurance would be gone.
Right.
It's instead of getting an insurance plan that would give you a guarantee of a stream of income when you retire, which would give you the cost of living increases as well to keep up with inflation, they want to have you go and take a chance on, that you can raise more money through your investments.
Right.
Well, you could buy insurance to cover you to be sure you've got at least the minimum, and then you can on your own go out and invest, but not take the money out of the fund that's supposed to be there to guarantee Social Security for everybody.
Yeah, we already have these systems, 401ks, IRAs, SEPs, things like that. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, just if I can just change the subject slightly for a moment, you mentioned these phony news releases that, Armstrong Williams and then the Karen Hughes ones, or what, that wasn't her name, whatever the phony reporter's name was that they did last year. Arnold Schwarzenegger in your state, the state that you represent, has just done the same thing with basically an anti-union pitch. Is that something that is going to come to the attention of the United States Congress, or is that pretty much just an internal California thing?
Well, that will be a California issue. I'm not aware of what he has done, but Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to get proposals on the ballot to take away benefits from state employees, to tell teachers that they've got to take less money, things like that. And he's threatening the legislature, who does not want to support his program, that he'll go directly to the people with a ballot proposal, and that he will raise the money and fund the campaign for those ballot proposals. Well, I hope he doesn't misrepresent what he's doing. And certainly he shouldn't be using state money if he has. I don't know the facts of all this.
According to the news reports I read on this program yesterday, already they produced a phony news report with a phony news reporter and sent it out as a video press release. And five television stations actually ran it as if it was a news story. And the union side of the story was not represented at all. It's just entirely, employers need the freedom to have workers work right through without having a lunch break, and they should be able to make the decision, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, we digress, and that's something that I'm...
Well, it's really so related. The idea that you try to propagandize people to support a certain political point of view, and when people start thinking that way, that it makes it easier to get changes that they want, but some of those changes are undermining what people would want if they knew the facts.
Yeah, well said. I know you have a very short period of time with us. Do you have a moment to take one call from a caller?
Certainly.
From a listener, rather. Excuse me. Mark in Clarksville, Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome. You're live with Congressman Henry Waxman.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Henry.
Hi.
I heard a proposal last night that simply by raising the minimum wage to $8 or $8.50 an hour would generate enough money into Social Security where you wouldn't have to mess with the cap and get the rich people mad, and it would also stimulate the economy so much that it might even create jobs.
Yeah, a Democrat who's going to be running against Rick Santorum called this program yesterday and shared his solution. He said if you just raise it to $8, he had figured the exact amount out, $8.86 or something like that. Because so much of the Social Security Trust Fund payments are made by people who are, the bottom half of the wage earners.
Well, that's a fascinating idea. The minimum wage ought to be raised under any circumstance, but it does provide, because of the FICA taxes, although on somebody making that little money, those FICA taxes are really quite regressive.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, people shouldn't be in this country working hard at a job and then not having enough money to live above poverty.
Yeah.
And they should be able to have health insurance. What I fear this administration's doing, if you look at the bigger picture, is if you eliminate Social Security and you cripple the ability of people to collectively bargain to get a better deal from their employers, and then you force them to pay more money for health care if they can get it at all, people are going to be so squeezed that they're going to be pushed into the lower classes, and there's not going to be a middle class left.
Yeah.
There'll be a small group on the top because they're getting the huge tax breaks, especially the billionaires. So I just think our country's moving in the direction that we see in a lot of Latin America, where they're going to live behind gated fences, hope that protects them from the masses. But that's not what America has always been about to me.
This is actually the direction it's been steadily going ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on working people, hasn't it? I mean, we've seen a steady erosion of middle-class incomes ever since 1980.
We've seen an erosion in incomes, but we've never seen anything like we're witnessing now, because Bush has a Congress, both the House and the Senate, that was willing to do his bidding. They don't even want to do oversight to give some checks and balances, which our Constitution envisioned. They just want to push things through as quickly as possible, and they're so radical, so extreme. Reagan was pretty ultra conservative, but this group now is they are extremists. They are moving things in a direction that is somewhat breathtaking. Environmental laws are throwing out. Worker safety laws are throwing out. They're not going to fund the health and safety agencies, Food and Drug Administration, even though we've had a vaccine shortage. The NIH, which should be researching to cure diseases. These are the places they're cutting so that they don't have to raise taxes on billionaires. And it's just the wrong direction.
It's the wrong set of priorities. Congressman Henry Waxman of California, thanks so much for being with us today and sharing your
My
perspectives with us. I very much appreciate it. Thank you, Congressman.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's 19 minutes past the hour. This is just remarkable. Here I am. Your Social Security statement, prepared especially for Thomas Hartman. Yes, indeed. Today there are almost 36 million Americans. Unless action is taken soon, in just 14 years, we'll begin to pay more in benefits than we collect in taxes. Well, that's how they planned it. That's why there's a trust fund. But they're not telling you that. Without changes, by 2042, the Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted. Well, it's supposed to be exhausted, as the end of the baby boomer really should be exhausted in the 2060s. I mean, we have this small adjustment problem, but because there's still income, you don't need the trust fund, then you just pay out of income. Anyhow, I'm ranting. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, hey, there's a new American way. No one's serving those deserving, but there's less tax to pay. We abuse our might and mock the world as we say.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
Boy, don't mess with us.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
Yes. Welcome back, my friends.
Did you watch the Sunshine State? How the scales got tipped to seal Al's fate? Jeb Bush winked, I told you so.
Yes, he's winking.
And the butterfly flew into Palm Beach. Oh, Al and Joe got one punch each. 10,000 Gore votes cast aside before you know.
Yes. And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your minimum daily requirement of sanity. Oh, my. Alan Greenspan up on Capitol Hill. I want to get to that in just a minute. If you'd like to call into the program, our number 1-866 888-589-8894. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, just go to TomHartmann.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there. TomHartmann.com. Click live chat. It'll take you into our chat room. And first, let's hear from a few callers here. Phil in Tampa Bay, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Hi. What's on my mind is the lack of privacy. And Bank of America apparently has a solution. I just got my statement today, and they say we're concerned about privacy as much as you are. And they're so concerned that I can sign up for a service for a mere $89.95.
you can pay the people who are selling your private information to tell you what they're selling to other people.
Yeah, $89.95. They gave you an 800 number. If you're concerned about it, call this number and they see us. That service is $89.95.
Yeah, presumably per year. $90 yeah. Well, okay. it's ain't capitalism marvelous.
And they told me that my current interest rate is a mere 24.24%, but they said effective April 1st, they've got a whole list of ways they can increase it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Above 25%.
Yeah. Effective April 1st. I just want to know one thing.
Yeah.
Where is it in the U.S. Constitution? It gives Choice Point and Bank of America and all these other companies the authority to have all my Social Security number and all this other kinds of stuff and sell it to other people.
Yeah,
where
actually,
the Constitution?
I'll tell you, first of all, the Constitution doesn't give rights. It limits the powers of government. And so the Constitution isn't giving rights to corporations. But I'll tell you, the state constitutions and state laws are the ones that regulate corporations, not federal laws, by and large. And this would have been illegal prior to the 1880s, 1890s, back when corporations were required to operate first and foremost in the public good, and secondly, to produce profits. And after the great charter mongering era, the result of John D. Rockefeller playing one state off against another, we now have, you know, and all the states started competing. It's the same way right now where, like, for example, Boeing said, okay, we're going to leave Washington. We're going to relocate our headquarters. Who wants to play? And they had Chicago and they had four different cities saying, oh, we'll give you a big tax break. No, we'll give you a bigger tax break.
Right.
No, we'll give you an even bigger tax break. And, you know, playing one off another. And who wins? The people of the United States? No, Boeing.
Sure.
And Sears did the same thing, and you know, and on the list goes, right? It's the thing to do. Well, this happened back in the late 1800s, when John Rockefeller got kicked out of Ohio for breaking that state's laws, antitrust laws. And so New Jersey said, well, we'll change our laws. You can come here. And the New York State said, well, we'll change our laws. And this big competition happened. It lasted about 12, 15 years. It's referred to as the charter mongering era. It ran from around 1885 to around 1897. And where they ended up, Delaware is the least restrictive of all of them, which is why all of corporations are incorporated in Delaware. And oversight is gone. Oversight is simply gone. And we need to recover it. And people are starting to realize now why. And as they did in the 30s, actually, you know, there was a lot of oversight coming back. And this was the central, by the way, this all happened in the 1880s, 1890s. And in 1902, 1903, Teddy Roosevelt is president. You know, McKinley dies.
Right.
Teddy Roosevelt becomes president. And what's his main shtick as president? Let's restrain the corporate behavior. Let's you know, roll these things back. In 1907, he passed a law saying it was a federal felony for corporations to give money to politicians. And, you know, we need another Teddy Roosevelt is the bottom line. The Republican Roosevelt. Phil, thanks for getting me started on that. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news. I'm Tom Hartmann with you.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartmann.
Welcome back, my friends. There you go. Voltaire, speaking of which, so long as the people do not care to exercise their freedom, our quote for the day, so long as the people do not care to exercise their freedom, those who wish to tyrannize will do so, for tyrants are active and ardent, and will devote themselves in the name of any number of gods, religious and otherwise, to put shackles upon sleeping men. George Bush proposing slashing health care funding. We've got a Greenspan alert. We're going to hear from Bernie Sanders here. First, let's take a couple calls here. Logan in New York City on the line. Hey, Logan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment about Ward Churchill and then another comment about Bush. Ward Churchill basically said he didn't say that the World Trade Center was a legitimate target. He said that basically we were bombing civilian targets, saying that Saddam was, you know, presumably hiding there, and that they're sort of doing the same thing to us. Both are wrong. I think that was his main point.
Yeah, I agree with you that that was his main point. I would say, however, that in characterizing the employees in the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns, he was inartful at best.
Definitely, definitely. And I just wanted to make another point about George Bush, basically what the Democrats should be focusing on. I think this whole Social Security thing is a red herring. I think basically all we need to do is get these guys out of office.
There you go.
And then we can change, the laws as we need to change it. We can change back whatever he does. So we need to get these voting machine things. This issue is the main issue.
Yeah.
And people just want to keep talking about him. I mean, if we can win the 2006 election, we can change a lot of things.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why you need to contact your local elected representatives. Of course, you have Senator Hillary Clinton, who actually introduced a reasonably decent piece of legislation two, 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that would make it a crime for what Blackwell has done in Ohio good old Kathleen did down in Florida, and Jeb would make it a crime for appointed or elected officials to participate in politics, for partisan hacks, basically, to be participating in supervising elections. Let's put those in the hands of nonpartisan bureaucrats, and would make it a crime for voting machine manufacturers to be politically involved. I mean, I don't think the bill goes far enough. I think we just, we need to put the voting machines in the hands of we the people.
The fight for Social Security can always be changed. We can always change it back.
Sure. Yeah. No, but I absolutely agree with you, Logan, 100%. The focus has to be in getting an electoral system that works again. And thank you for the call, by the way. And what we have right now is not an electoral system that works. It's not a system that people can trust. And why the Republicans would be so insistent on pushing machines that have no paper trail. I mean, to the point of crucifying the Attorney General in California because he went after the voting machine companies. Now they get Kevin Shelley out of office, and they're going to say, okay, now we can bring in the paperless voting machines just in time for Arnold's next election. It's beyond me why the Republicans would do this, because the day will come when Republicans aren't controlling everything. And if the machines are really that insecure, and apparently they are because they have been successfully hacked in the trials that have been done on them, then Republicans are as vulnerable as Democrats. What about democracy that everybody's talking about? Anyhow, Gary in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Tom, I really appreciate your program.
Thank you.
Two quick points. One regarding the voting machine. I believe voting machines are a state issue. Why don't we take and concentrate real heavily in those states that are somewhat blue states to get the voting? Since we can't do that from a federal level, I believe would be preferred. But why don't we concentrate on the states while we still have that right available?
Well, unfortunately, it's not entirely a state issue, Gary. The Help America Vote Act, which was passed in 2002, largely pushed by the Republicans, although a lot of Democrats went along with it, which was supposed to, quote, solve the problems of Florida, end quote, so there'd be no more hanging chads and things. This law set aside $3.6 billion, a little less than $4 billion, to give to the states so that the states could buy voting machines from these two or three Republican-connected corporations, Diebold, ES&S, and Sequoia, by and large, although there's a few others, and set up standards, but they set them up in such a sloppy way that those standards have not been enforced. The board that would enforce them was just recently put together. It's a patchwork quilt. There are no teeth. There is no enforcement.
So it kind of took away the ability of the states to establish the voting rights like they did before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hugely. Well, although you have to say that that right, by the way, goes back to after the Civil War. The 14th Amendment, the 13th Amendment, rather, to some extent took away powers from the states. And the Voting Rights Act, Voters' Rights Act of, what is it, 64 or 67, also took away some of the power of the states. So,
okay. The other question, comment regarding Social Security.
Yeah.
One thing I've never heard before, you know, one of the they're against raising the cap. And to some degree, I can understand at a level where this really puts business at a jeopardy as it goes higher and higher, because that business has to match that. I've never heard the idea about raising the cap on the laborers on labor side above, you know, removing it, but leaving it at on the businesses portion at the 90.
Yeah, that would do it, too. I mean, there's a lot of very creative and innovative proposals being put forward, and I think they're all great. And, Gary, thanks for your call. I do appreciate that. I think they're all great. You know, the suggestion that the fellow called yesterday with of let's raise the minimum wage, that'll solve the problem. That's pretty mind-boggling. That puts you in touch with how much of Social Security is being paid for by working people on the bottom end of the spectrum. I mean, it's truly, truly shocking. By the way, just wanted to remind folks that starting Monday of next week, particularly those of you in the New Mexico area who might be listening on our web stream or on Sirius Satellite Radio, KRSN in Los Alamos, whose signal reaches into Santa Fe, will be picking up our show and carrying at least, I believe, the first 2 hours of the program live. And we'll be going live in Philadelphia. I'm sorry, in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh on WPTT a week from Monday. So, two changes here coming up. Joe in Provo, Utah on the line. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. God bless you, man. I'll tell you, you've been an incredible asset to my learning curve out here.
Great. Well, thank you.
Yeah. I ran for U.S. Senate. I talked to you before, and there's a big change going on. People are really looking for something. And I think the biggest thing is really the issues. You know, it's kind of like we get so bogged down with the issues, we lose sight of what's really important, which I think you really do bring home in your conversation, which is, and I talk to people now, I'm running in 2006, I got 1% of the vote last time, and I didn't even campaign on the ground, it was all from my truck, I'm an over-the-road driver.
Mm-hmm.
It was just internet, website, and linking to blogs, things like that. But this time I intend to have a very aggressive campaign.
Good.
My focus with people is, you know, I'm here because I want a democracy, and right now I don't see it.
Yeah. Well, it's here in we still have some significant, substantial semblance of democracy, but to a large extent, it's being stripped away by corporate influence within the halls of Congress. We are seeing increasingly, you know, more than 90% of all legislation introduced right now has a corporate lobbyist either as its principal or as its secondary author. That should be a red flag. That should be illegal, frankly, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that I'm finding people respond to is they say, look, you know, I'm not trying to be reactionary, but the bottom line is, you know, and you can find, you know, point after point after point as to, you know, we are going to be, well, we are moving in the direction of fascism and or theocracy or a combination of both.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. You know, I'm running a campaign because I'm interested in democracy. How many people are interested in democracy? If you are, you can't assign yourself to this, but democracy has a requirement. One is it requires a rule by law, and either we are going to adhere to that or not, and that rule by law requires us to understand that right now we are running an illegal war. We're running, on and on. You just can go list by list by list of the things that are illegal that we're doing right now, and that isn't allowed in a democracy, so folks, make up your mind. You know?
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Joe. I appreciate the call. Very well said. And good luck on your campaign in Provo. When you roll out the formal version of it, give us a shout and let us know. I would be pleased to promote it. And speaking of voting machines, one of the real experts on voting machines in the United States, Lynn Landis, is on the line. Hey, Lynn. Thanks for calling in Philadelphia.
How are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. Toss out your website here before we go any farther, lest I forget.
Well, you can get to it two ways. One is banvotingmachines.org.
Hey, I have a bumper sticker, by the way, for that.
Right. Or EcoTalk, ECOTALK .org. Either way, you can get to the website.
Okay, so. Great. And you called about?
Well, you know, somewhat of a correction in that I don't see any end to the Republican control of or stranglehold of our government. As long as they control those voting machines, and they do control ESNS and Diebold, and they're counting almost 80% of all votes, I don't see any end to this. It's really bad news.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Democrats will one day regain their the position I think they should have now if this doesn't change. And it doesn't seem as though it will. The bills that are the Democrats are proposing in the Senate and in the House, neither bill, a so-called election reform bill, although it calls for ballot printers attachments to these touchscreen machines, it doesn't call for the ballots to be counted. So now we're in this mythical world of the margin of victory. If the margin of victory is small enough, we'll get a recount. But all that says to somebody who wants to steal an election is steal it by enough
right.
that no recount is ever triggered.
As some allege was done in Florida this year and perhaps in Ohio and perhaps in New Mexico as well.
Oh, exactly. I mean, the other thing is a fundamental thing. Why would we want to keep corporate America in the voting booth with us? Why would we want corporate America or any non, you know, machines are inherently non-observable? Why would we ever want these things a part of our voting process?
Yeah. This is the point I've been making from day one, that the software – I don't mind if a voting machine company manufactures the hardware. As long as the government owns it and programs it and is using open source software and it's not hooked up to the internet and the people, you know, because eventually I think particularly if we go to an Australian style ballot where we have instant runoff voting, which I'm totally in favor of, it'll be a heck of a lot easier if there's some technology involved here.
Well, you can do that without machines. And to be honest,
yeah.
Tom, as soon as we make this process unobservable, whether it's by machine or absentee voting or early voting, we've opened the door to massive vote fraud. And the rest of the world, they also have instant runoff voting and those kinds of more complicated processes, and they don't use machines. So I don't think there's ever an excuse to make this process unobservable.
Interesting. Interesting. Do you know, Lynn, of any other countries? I know that Canada just kicked out last year. The few voting machines that they had from, I believe they were Diebold machines.
Well, no, they still have, Barrie, Ontario still has the Diebold machines. In fact, there's so many problems with them, Diebold is offering to replace all of them for free. And this is the thing, is a lot of people think this issue is about money. It isn't. It's about controlling governments because, you know, of course, the stakes are so much higher. There's trillions and trillions of dollars at stake. They don't care. These companies will give those machines away in order to get elections officials to use them.
So are you suggesting, Lynn, that the companies themselves may somehow be complicit in election fraud?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to assume that. They are on the inside. They can do anything they want. There's absolutely no oversight. And even open source
This is like a Tom Clancy novel. It's like something Robert Ludlum would write. I mean, my assumption had been, frankly, that the companies just wanted to make money selling the machines and they would, you know, make them insecure enough that they could be hacked. But it's hard to explain why would they design a machine that could be hacked if the company is. But on the other hand, then you're talking about a conspiracy that it seems like you couldn't sustain. I mean, corporations are not that opaque, are they?
Well, these are corporations that you know very little about. I mean, none of us do. ES&S is a privately held company. Diebold is publicly traded. But other than that, they could change ownership from one day to the next, and we would not know who's in control of these machines. What are these corporations? What we do know is that, you know, as it stands today, these are very right-wing owners to these corporations. Mm-hmm. You have to assume that if we have a government and a corporate environment or culture that has lied to the American public consistently, why would we trust them with our voting system?
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's really important also because a lot of people say, well, you know, if it were a big conspiracy, we'd know about it. No, you can have a couple people on the inside of these companies that can affect 80% of all votes. So it doesn't have to be a huge conspiracy. Having said that, though, I think it is. And I think it's a conspiracy of the major news networks. They're one exit poller who can't explain his own results. And then these voting machine companies. So, and then, of course, you have the Democrats who strangely are really not making.
Yeah, they're like silent and scared to death. Lynn,
right.
I've got to move along, but thank you for raising this topic. Once again, the bannedvotingmachines.org is your website, yeah, or ecotalk.org. Thanks so much for calling
in,
Lynn.
Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. John in New England on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A question. The attorneys in Ohio that are taking on Kenneth Blackwell,
yeah,
I understand, are now being attacked by Blackwell.
Yeah, not only that, here's the new news from today. Today, or maybe it was yesterday, but it's in today's news. Blackwell has said that, you know, John Kerry and John Edwards got in on this thing. They filed friend of the court briefs or whatever they did. You know, they joined the process of saying, you know, we'd like to see an audit of this. We don't think that the recount was done legally. And now Ken Blackwell and the Secretary of State, whose name escapes me, the Attorney General, rather, whose name escapes me at the moment, have both just said that they want to either, number one, get Kerry and Edwards out of there so that they're not parties to the lawsuit, or they want to depose them under oath. So they're trying to cover this thing up. I mean, it's just so conspicuous.
Do the attorneys need money? Let us know what they need.
Yeah, okay, I'll pass that information along.
Okay, Jeff. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go.
Oh, no. Over my dead body.
The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. By the way, I just looked up the lawyers who are doing the Ohio case, Bob Fitrakis and others, freepress.org. is their website, and there actually is a donate button on there. So, John, there's your information. Hey, Lisa in Indianapolis, how are you today? What's up?
I'm fine, Tom. How are you?
Great. What's up?
Good. I just have three quick comments, please.
Okay.
One, first of all, I think you are absolutely awesome. I read your When Democracy Failed 2005 just recently.
Mm-hmm.
It is horrifying to me. It is absolutely the parallels of what we're going through and what happened in Nazi Germany is
Oh, and what's in there is only half of it. I mean, I didn't even have room to get into things like Hitler's demonization of gays in 1933 as a tool to gain power, making gays wear pink triangles and I mean, that's just scratching the surface of it.
It's almost like to me that the current neocons are using that whole situation in 2000.
It's like they're reading the playbook.
As a playbook,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then just two other real quick questions,
sure,
or comments. One, I really am really concerned about the election problems that we have, and I agree with the other caller earlier.
With Lynn Landis,
I beg your pardon?
With Lynn Landis. She's actually not just a caller. She's actually one of the leading authorities on voting machines in the United States.
Well, until that problem is addressed, I agree with her. We're fighting a losing battle.
Mm.
So I personally think the only way, I mean, we the people need to do a march on Washington for election reform and not take no for an answer, because
here's two starting points, Lisa. Number one, write letters to your editor, to the editor of your local newspaper, your local magazine, or your local radio stations, your local TV stations, contact them. And secondly, here's the phone number for Congress. Call your two senators and your congressman or congresswoman. The number is area code 202-224-3121. And tell them that you want to see the voting machines out and integrity in elections back in. How's that for a start?
Absolutely.
Okay,
wonderful.
Go for it.
The last thing.
I'm sorry, we're out of time, Lisa. The clock is brutal, but we got to go. I appreciate your call. Thanks so much. It's Tom Hartman with you. The vast radical middle conspiracy rolls on.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's Thursday afternoon, the second hour of our program, the time when we go a little beyond what conventional wisdom might indicate, sometimes into the strange and unusual, sometimes simply into the undercovered stories, the stories that really aren't getting the play that they need. A time when you discover that the things that you thought you knew are not necessarily real, that maybe you didn't even know what you did know. It's our...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could be. It's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Time to take a look at this situation. This is absolutely, the situation is absolutely amazing. 600,000 babies last year in the United States. A new study shows the impact of mercury pollution. $8.7 billion lost annually to poisoning the womb. Study published days before Senate Committee EPA decide on mercury reduction plans. So I wanted to get an expert on this. We have Dr. Leo Trasande with us. He's the Assistant Director of Children's Health and the Environment at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Dr. Trasande, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very pleased to have you on here. What is the situation with regard to mercury in our environment right now? Is the Bush administration protecting us the way that we would hope our government would?
Well, our study was first and foremost about children's health. Multiple studies have found that mercury causes health effects, but the studies have focused on small segments of a population. So we decided to assess the impact of mercury pollution on the health of America's children. We looked at data from the CDC and found that between 300,000 and 600,000 children born each year suffer effects from mercury. Mercury is emitted to the environment and deposits in water where fish ingest it. Pregnant women eat fish contaminated with methylmercury where it enters the bloodstream. And this methylmercury crosses the placenta where it causes brain damage in hundreds of thousands of children each year. On each of these children, methylmercury has a permanent impact that lasts a lifetime. Children enter school with lower IQ where they don't perform as well. And on taking a closer look, we also found that beyond the harm to individual children lie enormous socioeconomic consequences. This loss of intelligence due to methylmercury toxicity causes diminished economic productivity over the entire lifetime of these affected children. Mm-hmm. And we found that this loss of productivity costs America $8.7 billion annually.
That's remarkable. I mean, looking at it, translating it into the language of conservatives, of business, of money, $8.7 billion is not chicken feed. On the other hand, 600,000 children being impacted while still in the womb, while still in utero. Why? This almost seems like something that the Right to Life bunch might want to pick up. I mean, you've got a whole bunch of people out there who claim to be advocates for the unborn. Here we have the unborn under assault from mercury pollution. Have you heard any inklings or rumblings of any sort of grassroots movement among the religious right about this?
Well, there are some that have approached us as being very concerned about these findings because hundreds of thousands of children each year will continue to suffer this level of brain damage, generations of children each year, costing America more billions of dollars if mercury pollution is allowed to continue at this level.
Right. This is a substantial issue. And now let's just very quickly, the level of exposure, first of all. I see here the Centers for Disease Control counts that as many as 637,233 American children are born each year with mercury levels of more than 5.8 micrograms per liter of blood, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
What specifically are the consequences of this? You mentioned diminished IQ. Are there others?
Well, there are other possible effects. At higher levels, and perhaps there are effects that the research hasn't shown us yet. But at the very least, what we know and what this study finds is that children who are exposed to this level of mercury, of methylmercury, as their brain develops, they're not as sharp in school. They don't do as well on a variety of tasks. They might be the people who whose genetic predisposition would normally get them to be the CEO or the manager or what have you, but they may not be able to quite achieve that level of accomplishment and income over their lifetime as a result of this exposure.
Are we talking, by the way, about the kind of damage at the level of DNA that might be transmissible to future generations, or does this just whack the children, and then if they have children who are not mercury contaminated, their IQs may bounce back up, for example?
There are some laboratory studies that have found genetic impacts, but we're not talking about that here. What we focused on were cognitive impacts that just affect the current generation of children who are exposed.
Yeah. Now, I have a list of consequences of mercury exposure in breast milk here on one CDC website. Brain damage, mental retardation, incoordination, blindness, seizures, or the inability to speak. And there's a lot of debate now, I know, in the autism community about whether methylmercury or various forms of mercury may have something to do with autism, that there may be a genetic predisposition or a genetic weakness that makes it more difficult for these children to clear mercury out of their systems, and thus they are more likely the victims of it. Do you get into that realm of speculation, or are you you're just sticking with the stuff that is just absolutely obvious? It's right on the table. Nobody can argue with it. What are your thoughts on this?
We decided to stick to what was most definitively confirmed and easy to account in orders of magnitude. That is how many children suffer, clear-cut consequences from mercury.
Right.
There are a variety of impacts that, as you say, developmental disabilities. There are also even cardiovascular impacts that impacts on blood pressure and on heart rate variability. That there are good studies that have shown possible effects. But we will need further research to sort out how many kids are affected exactly and what the magnitude of that impact is. Hopefully something like the National Children's Study will bear that out.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Leo Trasande, the Assistant Director of the Center for Children's Health and Environment at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, coal-fired power plants produce about 40% of the man-made mercury emissions into the atmosphere. There are, as of this moment, 43 states that have 2,148 active mercury advisories saying, please don't eat the fish in the waterways. And this was a startling statistic for me. About 40 metric tons of mercury are used each year to produce silver amalgam fillings, which are 50% mercury by weight. Dentist's offices are the largest source of mercury pollution to the nation's wastewater treatment plants. Did you look at these kinds of sources, or were you just looking at the consequences of this on kids?
We were looking at outdoor air pollution sources and their impact on children's health. We would not advise, as a result of the study, for example, to have women who are considering being pregnant or are actively being pregnant to go have their mercury fillings taken out or anything of that sort. In fact, that actually may cause more harm than good.
Because it gets aerosolized as it's taken out?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, it may cause more harm than good. And even and especially in children, that may pose significant impact. We were focusing on preventable causes of mercury pollution that our government and our policymakers could impact.
Yeah. Do you get into, Dr. Trasande, do you get into the politics of this issue, or you're just sticking to the medical end of it?
Well, we've made great progress in reducing mercury emissions over the past decade. We've reduced mercury emissions from medical waste and municipal incinerators, and this is likely to have reduced the number of affected children by many more. We don't know by how many more because we didn't have this sort of data a few years ago.
Right.
We've probably reduced the cost of methylmercury toxicity by billions of dollars to date. Current provisions under the Clean Air Act will help by reducing mercury emissions from power plants further to only 5 tons per year by 2008.
But George Bush wants to do away with that.
Well, the passage of the Clear Skies Act would relax power plant emission controls and permit up to 26 tons of mercury to be released each year through 2010.
Instead of 5 tons, which is the current law. So George W. Bush's Clear Skies Initiative is going to actually raise the amount of mercury from 5 tons, from a limit of 5 tons to 26 tons. And just for perspective, you say that the amount of, or your study indicates that the amount of mercury that can cause these horrible problems in children is 5.8 micrograms per liter of blood. There's about 2.5 liters of blood in a person? Well, in a child, maybe a liter, liter and a half? How much blood is in a kid?
Well, it depends on the age.
Let's talk about a five-year-old going into school.
So a five-year-old would probably have a liter and...
Okay, so 5.8 micrograms, is, let's say 6 micrograms of mercury. How much mercury is that relative to a ton? Can you think of any easily, you know, a good metaphor to explain, you know, it's like a baseball to the World Trade Center or something. Is there any metaphor that comes to mind, or is it a simple way to explain it that people can get it and pass it along to their brother-in-law?
Well, these sources of mercury pollution are large baseballs that are thrown up into the air, and they disperse widely across, and they may even disperse not just from America but to international locations.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it stays in the United States.
Because it's a heavy metal, and it settles out.
It settles out in the water,
yeah.
and most specifically in freshwater, but also in seawater.
Yeah.
And then there are microbes that digest that
okay,
mercury.
Well, but let's just be very clear. A microgram is a thousandth of a milligram, and a milligram is a thousandth of a gram.
Right.
And how many grams are in a pound? Any sense? I can't convert from metric to English that fast.
I can't convert that fast either, but suffice it to say that a pound is much bigger than a gram as well.
Right. A gram is like a teaspoon of, a teaspoon of sugar, and a teaspoon of mercury actually would probably be a couple of grams because it's fairly heavy. And a ton is just a huge chunk of it. And we're talking Bush wants to have tons and 20-some-odd tons of this stuff being thrown into our air every year when a microgram, not a milligram, a microgram, a millionth of a gram, 6 millionths of a gram is enough to poison a child.
Well, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that these are, in the end, it would seem to some like the smallest amounts of mercury are getting into our water and poisoning our fish, and that gets passed along. But ultimately, children are extremely sensitive to
right.
a wide array of environmental chemicals, such as mercury.
Right.
And they can have, their brains are just developing, and it's at that unique moment, at that
yeah.
very important
this
moment where they can get injured as a
very,
result.
Very critical. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Leo Trasande, he's the Assistant Director of the Center for Children's Health and Environment at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. There's a news release about this on the Physicians for Social Responsibility website. Common Dreams has it on commondreams.org right now. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. It's 20 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
Grew up in a small town, by the mountains and the hills and the plains.
Yes, indeed.
Down in those smoky valleys, that the workers and the steel mills made. Now they're going to shut those places down, and I don't like the way it makes me feel. Been making steel for 100 years, and I think we got a rotten.
Yes, indeed.
American steel companies are the best in the land.
and they're making it all now in South Korea and Japan and China in particular. 25 minutes past the hour. We will be getting back to that a little later. I do want, however, to share with you just a follow-up on our interview with a good doctor about the health impacts of mercury. This remarkable, remarkable article. From the Bush Greenwatch folks today, today's report, In an astonishing, well, let me read you the headline. The headline is incredible. House committee downplays health risks of mercury. This is the House of Representatives, specifically Republicans in the House of Representatives. In an astonishing but lightly reported development 2 weeks ago, and I'll bet you didn't hear about this on the CBS Evening News. No siree, Bob. None of us did. In an astonishing but lightly reported development 2 weeks ago, the Republican staff of the House Resources Committee released a report asserting that the dangers of toxic mercury pollution have been greatly exaggerated, said Committee Chair Richard Pombo. Maybe it should be Bimbo or Committee Chairman Richard Pombo, Republican of California, and I quote, "It is clear that some special interest groups are crying wolf." Special interest groups? Yes, like doctors. Like the Mount Sinai Medical Center. They go on to add, the Clinton administration proposed an aggressive reduction of mercury emissions from coal-fired plants, reducing emissions by as much as 90% starting in 2008. The plan would require the installation of the best available pollution control technology. In contrast, the Bush EPA has proposed a cap-and-trade program requiring smaller and slower reductions. It would reduce emissions only by 70%, and not starting in 2008, but starting in 2018. And they have the audacity to call this the Clear Skies Initiative. And we, the people of the United States, are just like sitting around taking it. I mean, it's just, it is time to stand up and say, clear skies, what? And every time clear skies appears in a newscast, every time some news reporter talks about it, every time some radio station, some network, some local TV station, anybody mentions clear skies, you get on the phone with them and say, listen, I know that under the current laws, put into place by the Clinton administration, by the year 2008, mercury emissions are supposed to be reduced by 90%. Or starting in 2008, mercury emissions are supposed to be reduced by 90%. But the so-called Clear Skies Initiative, they don't have to even start until 2018, and then they only have to cut them by 70%. This is not clear skies. This is choke your lungs with mercury. The House committee report was written by Republican staffers rather than scientists. You get this? This is Committee Chair Richard Pombo. This man, I tell you, this is criminal. Congressman Richard Pombo should be brought up on charges of trying to damage the health of America's children. This man is a traitor to America. You may quote me. Walk notes that the House group repeatedly references industry-funded groups like the Edison Electric Institute and the Electric Power Research Institute. Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicity, the owners of coal-fired power plants don't want to reduce mercury emissions. They actually want to increase the size of their plants. Congressman Pombo, you are a prostitute for the power industry, and you should be ashamed of yourself, and I dare you to come on this program and defend yourself. 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Why does the sun go on shining?
Well, it has to do with nuclear fusion. That has to do with gravity.
Don't they know it's the end of the world?
No. That's James Watt. That was his theory, that you can sell off the timberlands out west and give it to strip miners and gold miners and whatnot, because when the end of the world comes, all things will be made new. Rhetorical questions and songs. Just 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. This is outrageous. This Okay, Ira, you got to pick up, punch up line one, go through the 800 number, and call call 202-224-3121. And if you need, you can come in here. I've got it on the card here in front of me if you need to come and write it down. 202-224-3121. That's the switchboard for Congress. And see if Congressman Richard Pombo, P-O-M-B-O, would like to speak with me on the air about the health risks of mercury. I would be pleased to put him on right now. In the meantime, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, there's a sort of right-wing talk show host in Florida who he believes his kids got mercury poisoning. And on this issue, he's pretty left-wing. His name is Mark Bernier. He'd be an interesting guy to talk to on this issue.
Yeah.
But the most important, the two important things happening in Congress today, the House Republicans are saying, Chairman Jim Nussle is saying that he has a budget for his Republican colleagues. He wants to trim $61 billion, pretty much the cost of the war in Iraq for
about half a year.
Well, actually, that's about $1 billion a week without the actual military. That's supplemental cost. You're right.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And he wants to trim at least $61 billion in non-discretionary spending.
Where?
Well, they're not.
Oh, wait a minute. In non-discretionary spending, you're talking about either the Defense Department, Medicare, Medicaid,
everything
or Social Security.
Defense Department.
So that's that. If well, see, discretion. I mean, okay, non-discretionary spending, though.
I'm sorry. Did I say non-discretionary? I'm not even reading my own hand. Non-security. Discretionary spending.
Oh, okay. So you meant
things like education,
right.
Food stamps,
right.
Et cetera.
The social safety net.
Cut. That's right. $61 billion. That's a lot of money from that budget.
Well, that's, I mean, these guys.
Non-security discretionary spending. I didn't even read my own handwriting. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, that's fine. These extremists, I mean, their agenda all along has been that, and ever since the 1930s, their agenda has been, well, I mean, you could take this back to Alexander Hamilton if you want, but nonetheless, their agenda has been that government should play no role in caring for the weak or the poor among us. That, you know, if Tiny Tim doesn't have medical care because Bob Cratchit has to work for Scrooge, tough. That's none of our, you know, it's we as a society, no
and
issue.
In the House Appropriations Committee, they want to trim $1 billion from the supplemental. Instead of $82 billion, it'll be $81 billion. Big deal. But let me just go on. One other big thing I want to drop in your lap today is Greenspan was in Congress this morning again. He usually does, you know, 2 days of testimony four times a year.
Yeah.
And he said that the United States needs to consider a consumption tax model as a replacement for the income tax model. And he said that it would promote
economic... Who said this? Greenspan?
Greenspan.
A consumption tax. So in other words, people who...
Like a VAT tax that
right.
they have
so, in Europe. So people like the middle class and the working class who spend virtually all of their income, they're going to pay all of the taxes. And those people in the upper classes and the millionaires and billionaires who can set aside their income and save it, they won't pay any taxes at all.
He is saying exactly... Well, he didn't say it that way, but he said...
Well, he's a millionaire, so, you know.
He said that this would... be a way of promoting economic growth. He did say that it does raise some challenging transition issues, but he said that it would boost resources available in the future through greater national saving and enhanced incentives for the labor force.
Right. Enhance incentives for the labor force. In other words, the more terrified they are, the harder they'll work.
I thought you would be able to go on that for the next hour.
I'll tell you, this is the thing. I mean, these guys, they want to roll back worker protections that Roosevelt put into place. They want to roll back that they're going to fight against the minimum wage that Roosevelt put into place. They want to do away with the Social Security that Roosevelt put into place. And not only that, they brag about it. Listen to this, Ellen. Hang on just a second. Ellen, hang on just a second. Listen to this.
So what? Get over it. Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
They're bragging about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're bragging about it.
What can I say?
They're bragging about it. I mean, there's, you know, $61 billion. We're going to cut it out.
The government has no business here involving itself in the lives of...
They are bragging about it. One last thing here is that he said it would make a stronger economy by limiting the potential distortions from an unanticipated changes in price level, and therefore it would provide predictability in the tax code.
Translate that for me.
It means that he thinks that if you have this, then the Congress can't be changing the tax code every 2 or 3 years, and therefore it is predictable if you just do it as a VAT tax.
But they just crank up the VAT tax if they wanted to.
Well, and hit
the middle class even harder. So he's spouting nonsense. I thought the most amazing thing, I saw the clip on the network news last night, and it just boggled me that nobody pointed out that he had actually said this, was when Greenspan came out and said that, let me get the exact quote here. Actually, it's in a different hour. It's in the folder for a different hour of this program. But he basically came out and said, if you're going to cut benefits for future Social Security retirees, and he's essentially recommending that you do that, that you cut those benefits, then you better do it quickly so that these people can start planning for their future, because they're going to have to rely on something other than Social Security. I mean, he just came out and said it. And he said it in Greenspan speak, so it didn't sound quite that rough, but I mean, that's what he said. And they played the clip on the news last night as if it was just like, oh, just, you know, I was astounded.
Well, you should be. But I just thought I'd drop those little bombs on you today, and now you can get your listener reaction to them.
Indeed. Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Ellen. Great to hear from you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, great. Actually, Ellen, we won't. We'll talk to you on Monday. So thanks a lot for the call. Actually, she's gone already. So Ira tells me, Ira... Hey, Ira, I got your mic all the way open. If you can get right up on top of it, tell us what happened when you called Richard Pombo's office. And you might want to put on the headphones instead of listening to the speakers, because you got a 6-5 second delay there.
They okay. All right, yeah, no, I gave him a call, and they patched me through 2 or 3 times and then told me that he's busy all day. And he's doing votes and important political things, and he can't come on today.
Amazing.
But he's supposed to. Louise is going to give him a call sometime next week, and I think he will be on.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good, good. Thank you, Ira. Thank you very much. It's Richard. Okay, is this guy a traitor or not? We need to give him another shot. Ira also notes in his instant message to me, it's a little difficult to talk to him sometimes because he's hearing the show in a 5-second delay, and that's got to be very disorienting in the next room over there. Anyhow, they had a bunch of calls from our listeners, Ira notes. So, yeah. What's going on here? Why is this guy saying that? To quote Senate Committee Chairman, the Chairman of the House Resources Committee, and this is what happens when you give Republicans power. Senate Committee Chairman Richard Pombo, Republican of California, quote, "It is clear that some special interest groups are crying wolf." Special interest groups, like human beings. Good grief! Okay. Back to more. Yeah, here's the Bush Greenspan touts idea of consumption tax. Thank you very much. And it just goes on and on and on. Ozone decline stuns scientists. Solar flares and frigid temperatures are believed to be working with human chemicals to eat away at the protective ozone layer above the North Pole, surprising scientists who have been looking for evidence that the planet's ozone layer is healing. The ozone layer protects Earth from dangerous ultraviolet radiation, which can cause skin cancer. And among other things, it can also cause blindness. It's slower. It causes a disease of the retina, which I can't recall the name of, but it's where your vision, suddenly things start looking squiggly as the retina just kind of disintegrates. It's the result of UV exposure, prolonged UV exposure. And in recent days, a lower layer of ozone has undergone an extraordinary thinning because of a level of bitter cold, about minus 110 degrees Fahrenheit, rarely seen in the Arctic, and man-made chemicals. See, a mix of solar flares, changes in the climate, and ozone-destroying chemicals, and what do you get? You get dramatic increases in ultraviolet radiation in the northern hemisphere this time. Last time it was in the southern hemisphere. It's been going on down there for a long time, the southern tip of Chile and Argentina. They're getting used to wearing sunglasses all the time and wearing, as Ronald Reagan advised. You will recall this is not a new issue. They first discovered the ozone hole back when Ronald Reagan was president. And the seriousness of it, and a reporter in a news conference said to him, President Reagan, what should the people do down there in South America? And what should we do if the ozone hole comes here to protect ourselves from this ultraviolet radiation that can cause blindness and skin cancer? And Reagan, in his infinite wisdom, kind of chuckled and said, well, you know, and of course I'm paraphrasing from memory, this isn't a verbatim quote, but something to the effect of, well, you know, We're just going to have to go back to wearing hats and using parasols. And there's always sunglasses. Aren't you reassured? Unfortunately, all the animals in the world can't do that. And when they go blind, when the amphibians, their skin doesn't function anymore, when the plants can't handle this level of ultraviolet light and they start dying prematurely, and the world begins to die, they can't just put a parasol over it, Mr. Reagan. Respectfully. You got some respect for the dead, I suppose. Randall and her colleagues, this back to this study on the ozone. This is from the Denver Post, by the way, from staff writers Katie Heumann and Kim McGuire. Randall and her colleagues studied a dramatic and unexpected drop in upper level ozone layers last winter, a few months before the decline. Massive solar storms had blasted high energy particles toward Earth. Randall suspects the energetic particles helped create chemicals called nitrogen oxides, which are known as ozone gobblers. Solar storms are natural, she said, but some scientists suspect humans also played a role in creating conditions that contributed to the historic ozone depletion event. Human-emitted chemicals are largely responsible for the massive ozone hole that has formed at lower levels in the Arctic atmosphere in recent days, experts say. There, unusually low temperatures are triggering reactions in which man-made chemicals quickly devour ozone, they say. And, you know, maybe Senate Committee Chair or House Committee Chairman Richard Pombo of California, maybe he's a good guy, the chairman of the House Resources Committee. Maybe he was referring to the special interest group. When he was talking about special interest group, maybe he was referring to the power plant industry that they're crying wolf. I hope he comes on this program. I will give him uninterrupted time. I won't shout him down. I'll be very polite to him, as you know, I always am to my guests, even when they're wrong. I would love to hear him justify this statement. Me. Yesterday, we had a discussion of Jerry Falwell. And Osama bin Laden, Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson, the three folks who said that 9/11 was done with the approval of God. And somebody sent me an email. Jerry Falwell on his father. This from his autobiography, the Reverend Jerry Falwell, in Strength for the Journey, an autobiography. And I quote, there were times the dad's pranks bordered on cruelty. He's speaking of his father. One of his oil company workers, apparently his father owned the oil company, or ran it. One of his oil company workers, a one-legged man named Crip Smith, complained about everything. Dad and Crip's co-workers got tired of the old man's belly aching and decided to take revenge. One morning, Crip called in sick, and Dad volunteered to send by lunch to his grateful but suspicious employee. Dad and his chums caught Crip's old black tomcat. They caught this guy's cat. Killed it, skinned it, and cooked it in the kitchen of one of Dad's little restaurants. They called it squirrel meat and delivered it to Crip on a linen-covered tray. When Crip returned to work the next morning, Dad and his co-conspirators asked him how he liked his meal. They knew he would complain even about a free home-cooked lunch, and when Crip called it the toughest squirrel meat he'd ever eaten, they were glad to tell him why. That from Jerry Falwell's autobiography, a story about his father. Here's a more recent quote from him. This from November 23rd, 2004, and I quote, "And we're going to invite PETA to Wild Game Night as our special guest, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. We want you to come. We're going to give you a top seat there so you can sit and suffer. This is one of my special groups. Another one's the ACLU. Another one is NOW, the National Order of Witches. I've got a lot of special groups." End quote. Jerry Falwell. Your Jerry Falwell moment here. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, say clean skies, fill them with mercury. It's what you do, not what you say, George. Got an email from William. Actually, sent it off to Louise. I recall that Greenspan supported balancing the budget under Clinton and that he favored the tax cut under Bush. I think it would be interesting to give him an opportunity to be in the air to clarify his stand on VAT tax, because this guy needs to be nailed down to one of his many faces. Yes, I can tell you the day that Alan Greenspan is willing to come on any kind of into any kind of venue that he might consider hostile or where people might ask him difficult questions that he's not forced to. I mean, he's forced by law to put up with Bernie Sanders from time to time. And Bernie regularly, I hear it. This is just
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations.
And then he goes on and on. In fact, we'll get back to a little bit of that in the next hour of the program. It's because I just want to get into this Bernie thing here. But Scott in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up? We got about a minute and a half left here.
Tom, how are you? I'll keep it quick. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, proudly calling from the most powerful blue state, California.
Yeah, and it may not be a blue state if you get a new Secretary of State and he puts in electronic voting machines.
Well, I can assure you that we will not allow that to happen.
Good on you, Scott.
I was just hearing about your comments about another yahoo from California, but I wanted to let you know, too, while we're taking care of business, that there's a guy, Representative Jim Gibbons out of Nevada. Have you heard about this guy?
Yeah.
Made statements saying that the people who disagreed with Bush's policy in Iraq were tree-hugging,
right,
Birkenstock-wearing, hippie, tie-dyed liberals who should,
yep,
be used as human shields.
Yep. That was such low-hanging fruit. I didn't even drag that out to rant about it on the air.
God,
I
mean, it'll just drive you crazy. And he makes a statement Wednesday, not apologizing for it, but just reiterating and endorsing his position.
See, this
shows you they have no shame.
Well, not only do they have no shame, but it also shows you how much power, how secure they are in their power. And they don't have to answer to we the people. They don't have to care what we think because they got their voting machines, they got their redistricting, they've got their billions of dollars, they've got their hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, all this money coming from all these huge corporations. They can just look at folks like you and me and tell us that, you know, we can take a hike.
Yeah, but not if we stick together, man.
There you go, Scott. There you go. We got to get active. We got to get out there. We got to speak up. We got to stand up. Let your voice be heard, my friends. The telephone number for Congress, 202-224-3121. Write it down in a prominent place and call it once a week. Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds. You can count on it. Oh, welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. TomHartman.com, the website. A marvelous day here in the People's Republic of Vermont.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
Oh, very good. See, that's what that music just does anyway. It's a beautiful day to get on an airplane. I'll be speaking tomorrow night in San Diego at the Church of Today, and Saturday doing a workshop there, and returning home on Sunday to be back behind the good old stainless steel working class microphone here on Monday. From the People's Republic of Vermont. I think it's time now for one of our Piggies alerts.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirts?
It's the bigger piggies in their starched white shirts.
Bigger piggies stirring up the dirt.
But they always stay clean. Yes, our Piggy alert today from the Associated Press, Dateline Denver, when rumor of a foot-and-mouth disease outbreak among Kansas cattle hit the commodities trading floor in Chicago 3 years ago, prices plummeted. The rumor was proved false the next day, but the beef industry had already lost an estimated $50 million as investors looked to other commodities. You know, I find it's interesting that they don't point out that if beef dropped only for one day, you know, there's demand. It's going to bounce back up, is it not? Anyway, now lawmakers around the country are looking for ways to keep livestock disease investigations secret until absolutely necessary. Proposals have passed in Idaho and Wyoming. Lawmakers in Colorado, Maryland, and Utah are considering bills this spring. Consumer groups say hush-hush investigations would cover up legitimate concerns about food safety, but industry officials, the folks who really run this country, industry officials say unfounded rumors can ruin their bottom lines. And after all, that's what American democracy is all about, isn't it? The bottom line of industry? For some reason today, I have felt like ranting. It's a good day for ranting, I suppose. It's a good day for ranting. Louise came in earlier. You're going to get on a plane today. Is it a good day? Is it a good day to die? What? Oh, it's an old story. It's an old story. It's anyhow, David Lee, no, I'm not going to die in the airplane. I always think I am, but I'm not going to. God willing. David Lee sends me an email. He says, I just figured out that 6 micrograms, that's how much mercury it takes to poison a child from the smokestack of a coal-fired power plant. And under the current law, starting in 2008, they've got to cut this down. They cut this emission down to 5 tons per year. But under the Clear Skies Initiative, which will probably pass Congress this year, they won't have to cut it until 2018. And then they only have to cut it by 70% instead of 90%. So we'll still have 20-some-odd tons. Well, 6 micrograms, the amount it takes to poison a child so that they have permanent brain damage, goes into 1 ton about 152 billion times. So 1 ton of this stuff, keep in mind, George W. Bush wants you to have 26 tons per year going into the air from the smokestacks of America's power companies. Under the current regulations, they've got to cut it back to 5 tons. Just 1 ton is enough to poison 152 billion children. Well, I mean, there's only 6 billion people in the world. 6.1 now, I think it is. I don't know what percentage of them or how many are kids, but 152 billion kids can be poisoned by 1 ton of mercury. George W. would like us to have over 20 tons of mercury. The current law says, no, you can only have 5 tons of mercury. Oh, we got to do away with that current law. It's going to be too costly to industry. It's going to be absolutely too costly to industry. We just can't have that. I have to do this.
Mr. Greenspan,
I have
long been concerned that you are way
Congressman
out
Bernie
of
Sanders
with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world.
This is Bernie in a moment of sincerity. And I think he really was sincere, because I've heard him say this to Greenspan over and over and over again. You know, I think you're a decent guy. You're just misinformed.
And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America.
But that's where you hang out, Mr. Greenspan. We all know it. You're a multimillionaire. You've been a multimillionaire ever since Ayn Rand initiated you into her little cult with the objectivists back in the 1950s.
The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule.
That would be a surprise to Mr. Greenspan. He would say, well, why then do all the network television programs, when they talk about the economy, talk about the stock market and how corporate profits are doing instead of talking about labor issues and average wages and workers? I mean, there can't be too many of those workers out there. They never get discussed on TV. It must be that everybody's a millionaire, Greenspan thinks.
You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%.
Oh, but they're going to do something about that right now. They got a bankruptcy bill before Congress to make it harder for people to declare bankruptcy, particularly people who are elderly and sick. Did you see that in today's newspaper? They specifically, the Democrats tried to put a rider into this bankruptcy bill that would exempt, that is, it would allow people who are elderly and sick and are declaring bankruptcy because they can't pay their medical bills, that would allow them to keep their home if it had a value of $150,000 or less. And the Republicans said, no! Can't have that, no siree, Bob.
Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation.
George Bush, though, says everything is fine. Freedom's on the march. The economy's doing good. We're bouncing back. Come on, Bernie.
And this is an economy that is improving.
See, there you go.
I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking. Now, today, you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't. But you have insulted tens of millions of American workers. You have defended over the years, among other things, the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires.
And as well, the elimination of Social Security. I mean, you know, the world really worked well when Dickens was writing about it. You know, Bob Cratchit just, you know, he showed up on time. He was terrified.
But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced. We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce. Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages, and all of that does not.
Now, that's just fine. That's the way it's supposed to be, isn't it, Bernie? I mean, you know, the rich get rich, the poor get poor. I mean, isn't there something in the Bible about that?
Matter to you. Doesn't matter. If it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour, it doesn't matter. You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out.
Have you noticed, by the way, that you don't hear these rants by Bernie whenever Greenspan testifies on CBS, NBC, or ABC? You ever wonder why?
Only working for the CEOs who can take out plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican,
told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs. Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and 136 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
That's a great question. Let's hear what Greenspan has to say.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not.
Actually, Sweden has the highest standard of living. Norway's right up there.
Go to Scandinavia, and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms of education, health care, and decent-paying jobs. Wrong, Mr.
May
Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you. For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size.
Okay. It doesn't count because Sweden and Norway and Europe, for that matter, they're all countries that are smaller than the United States. If you're going to be our size, then that changes everything, and it makes it appropriate that you wipe out the middle class.
Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes...
He means to us millionaires.
The purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce.
Yes. See, it doesn't matter what we produce. So what? We can't make our own missiles. So what? We're not making our own clothes. It doesn't matter. Yeah, right.
I submit to you that, may I?
I'm just making a face.
The major focus of monetary policy is to create an environment in this country which enables capital investment and innovation to advance.
It's all about...
We are at the cutting edge of technologies in the world.
It's all about capital investment.
An extraordinary job over the years. And people flock to the United States. Our immigration rates are very...
That's because the abutting countries are even more disastrously poor than we are. That doesn't...
Very high. And why? Because they think this is a wonderful country to come
to. That is an incredible answer.
Mr. Paul?
Yeah, and then they shut up, Bernie. That's enough from you, Congressman. We're not going to hear any more from you. How dare you challenge the multimillionaire Mr. Greenspan defending the multimillionaire ruling elite of this country? We just can't have that. I'm sorry. No, instead, we need to get some multimillionaire like Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh on. Let's change the dial quick here, Martha. This guy's starting to talk like he's a liberal. What's going on? That's it. 20 minutes past the hour. You're in the Democracy Zone. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, I was in the car and I heard this guy. He sounded all shook up and he told me why. His voice was a shaking on the EIB. Sounded like an Oxycontin eater to me. It was a bug-eyed, tone-deaf, flying Oxycontin eater.
Right-wing syndicated, spinning liberal people beater.
Right-wing strung-out, hypocrite prescription cheater. Rush looked strange to me.
That guy?
Well, his housekeeper picked up some drugs on the street.
There's a theme here.
He brought the stuff home for the boss to eat. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I tried to quit twice, but it was just too tough.
He was a big mouth, blowhard, right-wing propaganda reader.
Oh, come on. That's welcome back, my friends. It's the ever-vilified liberal talk radio here.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
Yeah, it's 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The House Democrats are going to out the Republicans, or at least they're trying to. It's awful hard to get anything done for the Democrats because they don't have control of the committees. But they're going to try and force a vote, at least in the House Judiciary Committee, so that the Republican majority will have to go on record that they do not want to investigate Gannon Gate, Jeff Gannon. That should be entertaining. Cecilia in Seminole County, Florida has called in. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, if you would like to be on the air with us. Hey, Cecilia.
Hi, Tom. Gee, it's been an absolute pleasure to listen to the rant today.
Well, thank you. I think I had too much. I'm drinking a mixture of green tea and black tea here.
No, I'm right there with you.
Too strong.
Two things. Prior to my father's death for 2 years, actually 2.5, my father suffered the results of mercury poisoning from eating fish. He was a staunch Catholic and ate a lot of fish. And his blood mercury levels were 600% above normal limits or acceptable limits. And
Whoa.
This man was on more morphine than you could shake a stick at, and he could not seek relief. I mean, it's not just the children, but anybody, the old people, peripheral neuropathy.
And it's not like this. Yeah, peripheral neuropathy, exactly. And it's not like this is a new, and there are other neurological deficits as a result of it. It's not like this is something new. You know, the phrase "mad as a hatter" came about because the felt, when you make felt hats, they use mercury in the goop that they use to make that, you know, felt is like all these little fibers of whatever it is, cotton or something,
right.
and to hold it together. And the hatters back in the 18th and 19th centuries who were making these top hats would get this mercury on their hands, and of course it's absorbed through the skin, and they would go insane. They would lose their, first of all, they'd have incredible pain. I mean, their nerves are just firing randomly. They would lose the ability to feel things on the one hand, and on the other hand, they'd have excruciating pain. And they would, and very often, they just kind of lost it mentally.
It's an intractable pain. I mean, it cannot be, it would never goes away. Not even with, I mean, he was on morphine that he had to take short and long acting every hour for 2 years.
Did they try chelation therapy, Cecilia, with him? I'm just curious.
Excuse me?
Did they try chelating that out of his system?
Yes, he was on horse pills, chelation therapies. He went through epidural injections. He went through everything. We went through, you have no idea what we went
through. And they couldn't get it out, huh?
No, it was too late. The damage was already done. When you have Mr. Pombo on, would you ask him something else? My buddy, Mr. Pombo, I've been watching him for years.
Yeah, well, Louise actually says that his office said that he would be glad to come on next week. So
ask him why. Ask him how he can justify putting out press releases saying that he is increasing and making the Endangered Species Act better, when in reality, in his position of Natural Resources Committee Chairman, he is eviscerating the Endangered Species Act. We're going to take out wilderness designations. We're going to allow Army Corps of Engineers.
Cecilia, do me a favor. One of two things. Either, number one, if you listen real regularly, call when he's on, because I don't have that right in front of me. Or two, find a news release or some documentation of that and email it to me, and I'll print it out and have it ready, because I can't remember that list right off the top of my head. So,
but he is leading the charge to eviscerate. I'll even do one better. I'll send you his press releases so you can see what he is proclaiming as being an improvement.
Great,
because in
great.
Reality, what they want to do is take out habitat protection.
Great.
And it's just dreadful.
And, you know, you have my email, I believe.
TomHartman@Hartman.com?
No, it's Tom@TomHartman.com.
Right. Yeah. I have sent you. Yeah. Thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you, Cecilia. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Keep up the good work. 29 minutes past the hour, and spread the word. This is so important. It's the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people. Tom Hartman with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Say what you want, mean what you say.
Always good advice.
Remember the deepest seeds still find the light of day.
You know, that is the deepest seeds still find the light of day. Jefferson, when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, he included in there two references to nature's God. And John Adams, who helped edit it, and many of his editings were done, it just anguished Jefferson to have his work being edited. And Franklin tightened it up kind of nicely. Franklin made some great suggestions. But Adams, he said, you know, let's replace this nature's God stuff, you know, let's make it, you know, like a Christian God or something like that. And Jefferson was like, no, it's nature's guy. He says, it is the way of democracy is the way of nature. It is the natural state of human beings. And for 200 years, everybody thought, Jefferson, 230 years now, it's longer than that, 1776, what is this, 240 years, more or less, 239 years. People have thought that Jefferson was wrong. That democracy is not the natural state of all nature. That hierarchy and dominance is the natural state of things. That there's alpha animals, you know, the alpha buck who runs the deer herd or whatever, you know, the alpha wolf, the she-wolf, the lead, the hunter. Yeah, sometimes it's male, sometimes it's female, but, you know, there's the queen bee. I mean, we've reinvented our vision of the animal kingdom to be consistent with that of the historical view of kingdoms and hierarchy. And Jefferson said, no, you guys have it wrong. There's democracy in nature, and democracy is the natural state of humans. And Adams and Hamilton and the other classic conservatives in the early government. I mean, most of the conservatives went to Canada or back to England. But the guys who were sort of revolutionary conservatives, like Hamilton and Adams, they said, okay, well, we'll do this democracy stuff. We're still not convinced it's such a great idea. For example, in 1786, John Adams wrote, and I quote, if the original and fountain of all power and government is in the people, in other words, if we're going to believe what you say, Mr. Jefferson, as undoubtedly it is, he's got to say that to be politically correct, because they were very suspicious of John Adams. After all, after the Boston Massacre, he was the lawyer who defended the British officer who killed that guy or those people at the Boston Massacre. A lieutenant, I forget his name, Lieutenant so-and-so. Anyhow, he says, as it is, the people have as clear a right to erect a monarchy, aristocracy, or democracy, or an equal mixture, or any mixture of all three, if they judge it better for their liberty, happiness, and prosperity, as they have to erect a democracy. That, you know, what the conservatives were saying back then. In other words, hey, you know, you never know. People may want a kingdom back. They have the right. And try and argue with that, George W. There are those who are suggesting the vote was rigged in Iraq. It was just a weird coincidence that the party that has suggested there should be a theocracy was just 2 points under the majority necessary to actually put it into place. They got 48%, even though the polls were showing they should have about 60%. But that's a whole nother rant. Anyhow. So along come Comrat and Roper, these two scientists in England, in the United Kingdom. And I interviewed one of them for my book, What Would Jefferson Do? There's a chapter about this in the book. And they said, let's test this hypothesis. Is it true that democracy is not the way of nature? Because folks like Adams were saying, you know, we'll have this democracy and it'll be just fine, but we're going to have to resist human nature in order to do it. We're going to have to carve this into law. We're going to have to force it on people, essentially, because the natural state of people is not to be democratic. It's to have somebody lord over them. The natural state of nature is not to cooperate, it's to dominate. That was the worldview of Adams and Hamilton, and today is still the worldview of conservatives. And science had assumed that. So Conrad and Roper said, you know, nobody's ever tested this hypothesis. Let's check this thing out. They're at the University of Sussex in the UK, and there's a herd of red deer near the university. And so they go over and they mount some cameras in the trees or something and say, let's watch these guys for a while. And the deer are grazing, and they're kind of randomly pointing in different directions. And there's the alpha deer over there, that big buck. And at some point, this herd of deer has to decide which one of the three nearby water holes they're going to go to and when they're going to go there. And this is actually a fairly important decision. If they graze too long, somebody may get dehydrated. If they don't graze long enough, others may not get enough nutrients. How do they know when to move? How do they know that, you know, if you graze too long? I mean, the youngest among them may. How do they know? How do they protect for the elderly and the young? And how do you make sure that the maximum good is accomplished? The assumption for hundreds of years, and Darwin certainly shared this assumption to a large extent, the assumption has been
that the wise elder or the alpha male would know. And he'd just say, okay, guys, time to go drink. Follow me.
So they put the camera on the herd of red deer. And what they discovered was, you know, typically between 2 and 3 hours, after 2 or 3 hours of grazing, for example, I don't remember the exact amount of time, but let's say that that's what it was, that typically they would stop grazing and go drink. And so as this time period, as the kind of end of grazing period starts to approach, different animals start pointing at different of the water holes, just randomly throughout the herd. And when 51% of them are pointing toward one particular water hole, all of a sudden the entire herd, within a minute or two, the entire herd forms itself in one direction and goes marching off to that water hole. And very often the alpha animal is in the back going, huh, what happened? Where'd everybody go? It's democracy. They were voting. You put a predator in the area, and it took two-thirds for them to decide which water hole to go to. Just like when they wrote the Constitution, they said, you know, if you're gonna confirm a Supreme Court justice, something like, you can filibuster, it's gonna take two-thirds, roughly two-thirds, 60 votes out of 100. If you're gonna ratify an amendment, if you're gonna propose and pass an amendment to the Constitution, it's gonna take two-thirds. It's gonna take three-quarters of the states. The bar goes up when the stakes go up. So they published this in the journal Nature, which is one of the top science publications in the world. And when I interviewed Tim Conrad, he said, and now we're hearing from all these sciences, ichthyologists, you know, fish people are calling. You know, I noticed this with schools of fish. There's not like one lead fish. They're all making micro motions. You do the slow motion photography and you can see it. They're all making little slow motion movements. And when, you know, a majority of them have moved a quarter of an inch to the left, the whole school moves a quarter of an inch to the left. And the same with a flock of birds. And the same, and talking to insect folks, entomologists. And they're saying, you ever seen a cloud of gnats? I remember when I was a kid, we used to go down to my childhood friend, Bill Thomas and Jerry Stamsky and I, we used to go down to, there was this little creek about a mile from our house, and we'd walk down there, and we always had this fantasy that we were going to catch crayfish and, you know, bring them home and present them to our parents, you know, like Jed and Ellie Mae. and maybe they could make lunch out of them or something. I don't know. I was 10 years old. What can I say? Anyhow. We never did get any crayfish, by the way. We got a lot of weird things. We were never quite sure what they were. Maybe they were. None of them looked edible. But I remember sitting by the bank of the river, and you see this cloud of gnats. It'd be about 2-3 feet tall and about 8-10 inches in diameter. This kind of circle. Well, it's actually a spherical. Well, it's not a sphere because it's. I don't know what you call that. It's a. I have forgotten my was it trig that would do that? In any case. And it would just kind of hang out there. And then they'd just like move. All of them, all at once. And there'd be a few left over, you know, going, hey, what happened? And they'd eventually catch up with the rest. But by and large, the whole herd of them or swarm of them or if, whatever you call it, of these little gnats. I mean, they got brains that are the size of a not the head of the pin. I mean, that's their whole head. Their brain is the size of, half the size of a grain of salt. And they're monitoring what's going on all around them, and they are voting democratically. Where should we move next? What do you think, Ralph? What do you think, George? And off they go. Turns out, and you see this throughout the animal kingdom, turns out democracy is burned into our genes. It is in our DNA. Jefferson was right. And in fact, when one element of a society rises up and tries to take control of the rest of the society, that not only is not natural, but in the world of biology, in the natural world, There's a word for that. When one organ or one bunch of cells says, we're going to take over from the rest of you. We're going to take all the nutrients. We're going to hoard all the wealth. And so what if some of the rest of you don't have enough? You can just die off. There's a word for that. It's called cancer. So I pose the question to you. Are the Greenspans and the Gateses of the world a cancer in our society? Speaking of Republicans, USA Next is a Republican front group. USA Next, of course, this is the bunch that has decided they're going to take out the AARP. We're going to get them. The AARP had defended some local initiative, some state initiative. I believe it was in Oregon or Washington State, somewhere out in the Pacific Northwest, where people could basically have civil unions. And the reason why the AARP was actually defending this was not so that gay couples could have civil unions, although it might have had that consequence. But it was so that if two elderly people living together, say two old guys or two old ladies who had been friends forever, or a man and a woman who were just friends, or a brother and a sister, and they're 80 years old, and they want to set it up so that legally if one of them dies, the other one can inherit everything. If one of them goes into the hospital, the other one can make the decisions and pull the plug if necessary. They have rights of visitation and things, but particularly, you know, old friends, that they can sign some sort of a document that gives them some sort of legal status, legal family status. It was for old people. It had nothing to do with sex. Well, the AARP says, well, but if this law passed, then it would have opened the door to gays having civil unions. So what? That was not the purpose of it. And the AARP would argue maybe it wouldn't even do that, by the way. But anyhow, so here USA Next with the Swift Boat guys. Well, this is the Swift Boat guys to some extent. I mean, they've pulled together this coalition or this bunch. They're doing the rounds. They are doing the rounds. And it's really quite remarkable. On Fox News, they got Art Linkletter now as their toady. Poor Art. I mean, what a fool he is being made for these lying. What a fool he is being made of by them. On February 7th, the 16th, the 17th, the 18th, and the 28th, they were on Fox News. They were on February 23rd, they were on CNN's Inside Politics and MSNBC's Hardball. On the 25th, Lou Dobbs had them on his show. And not in any one of those cases were they identified as a front group for the Republican Party. Not once. In all of these cases, of course, they were promoting privatization of Social Security and trashing the AARP. Charles W. Jarvis, this is from Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org. Charles W. Jarvis, president and CEO of the right-wing lobbying organization USA Next, has been ubiquitous on TV news in recent days, attacking the AARP and lobbying for President Bush's plan to partially privatize Social Security. These appearances have generally left the impression that USA Next is a grassroots, issue-based advocacy group representing seniors. In fact, USA Next is something quite different, a Republican front group. Since its founding in 1991, the only common thread discernible in the group's diverse lobbying activities is aggressive, unconditional support for the Republican Party. The group has supported Republicans and attacked Democrats on issues as varied and as seemingly distant from traditional seniors' issues as conservative judicial nominees, drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and abortion. Moreover, much of the group's funding comes from pharmaceutical companies, not individual seniors. But ABC World News Tonight reported on USA Today's or USA Next's attacks against the AARP on February 28th, never once mentioned that it's a Republican front group, never once mentioned. They did mention that they had hired the Swift Boats people, but did not mention that this is only the most recent event in the group's history of pro-Republican activism. What has this world come to? Tom Hartman with you, 10 minutes before the hour. We have a Toyota Prius, you know, the hybrid car, and the battery has been dying for a couple of weeks, by coincidence, after Louise drives it. And so I thought Louise was leaving the door open, or, you know, seatbelt stuck in the door or something, the overhead light was on, and so I'm like ragging her on her about it. Hey, Louise, you know, you gotta make sure you close the door. Because AAA, I mean, we had to have them come over yesterday and jump the car. And finally, I mean, this is like a third, fourth time they've had to jump the car, and the AAA guy yesterday says, your battery's dead. So today she's, okay, we gotta get a new battery. So she calls over to the gas station, and they go, well, that's a weird battery. It's only for the Prius. So you gotta, you know, it's a $300 battery. You gotta call the dealer. So she calls the dealer. And they go, oh, what, that battery's been recalled. You've got to bring the car in. It needs a modification. And she says, well, what's the recall order say? Well, it says it won't hold a charge in cold weather. So now I have to apologize to her. And I can't pick on her any. I can't make women jokes and cars and things any. Not that it's over the top. It's good nature. You win a few, you lose a few, right? In 1995, and hopefully we'll have a new battery tomorrow. And the car can still get me to the airport today. In 1995, USA Next, just finishing this up. This group was founded in 1991 by, to quote Media Matters on their website, mediamatters.org. It was founded by Richard Viguerie, legendary activist. Conservative activist Ridgery Viguerie founded USA Next in 1991 to, quote, bombard the elderly with tens of millions of solicitations, generating millions of dollars in fees for his private companies, according to a November 12, 1992 New York Times report. Interesting. Far from being a grassroots seniors organization, USA's, quote, board and executives consist entirely of direct mail experts and people active in conservative causes. Some New York Times. The organization had been criticized by members of both parties for, quote, preying on vulnerable old people with statements that distort the problems facing Social Security and Medicare, especially by exaggerating the threat to current retirees. Say what? I mean, this is starting to. This is getting remarkable. I mean, it's just started. In 1995, USA worked with discredited Republican pollster Frank Luntz. Yes, Mr. Magic Words, to craft a controversial memo on Medicare that referred to older Americans as, quote, pack-oriented, quote, and, end quote, and, quote, susceptible to following one very dominant person's lead, end quote. That very dominant person, of course, in this case being George W. Bush. Furthermore, Washington Monthly reported in May 2004 that, quote, during the 2002 election, with an unrestricted educational grant from the drug industry burning a hole in its pocket, the group USA Next spent roughly $14 million, lion's share of its budget, on ads defending Republican members of Congress for their votes on the Medicare prescription drug bill. I feel unclean just having read this. Art Linkletter, where... Come back to San... Come on back, Art. We'll take you back. We'll take you back. Thanks for being with us. It's Tom Hartman. That's me.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
I suppose I should say I'm Tom Hartman. See you soon.